Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Right, I've got the strategic lead for restorative justice within the prison. I'll give you some background to me at first. My lovely career started in the South Australian Police Force some time ago now. I won't tell you my age, etc., but I worked there for 15 years. Within that, I ended up working with the Aboriginal community in the outback of Australia. It's called a place called Oodnadatta. So those of you that know South Australia, it's right up the top near the border with the Northern Territory. We went out there to build relationships with the Aboriginal communities, etc. I ended up actually living with the Aboriginal community for nearly 3 months to find out what they did, how they did it, and why they did it. But they accepted me into their community and taught me the principles and values of restorative justice and how a nomadic tribe work with their families, the people that commit crimes within the tribe, and how they deal with those, both in a restorative practice methods and both in a very punitive method, more punitive than probably the West justice systems that we operate within. So that started my enthusiasm for restorative justice, because the Aboriginals are a tribe that are over 200,000 years old. So they come with all this expertise. So I went back to my system after 3 months of living in the community with the Aboriginals to start implementing that within the police force in the area that I was working in. It was no surprise that Victoria and New South Wales and over in sunny New Zealand, they had very similar models operating in the late 80s and 90s. So we all went on the official training sessions on restorative justice, or restorative justice solutions that some of you might have heard of over here, and we started incorporating that into the systems in Australia. And then in 2000, I came over to sunny England because the climate here is fantastic, and that's why I came over here, and here I am now working in the prison system. My first 10 years was in youth offending teams as an operational manager there, and I worked looking at restorative justice in high-risk complex cases and putting into practice what I'd learnt there. Again, from that, recently, 2 years ago, I started working in Hindley Prison, and then the passion had sort of dwindled a bit in restorative justice. But I said, whilst working in the youth offending team, I worked with Baroness Newlove, who, unfortunately for her husband Gary was killed in Warrington in the area that I was working as a yacht operational manager. So that sort of enthused me to work with victims again and bring restorative justice back into operation. So I started in Hindley and found out there was nothing in the secure settings. I contacted other establishments, could not find anything or clear policy, procedure, etc., that was operating in the custodial setting. So I looked at the core assets that come into the system from our colleagues in youth offending teams and developed an offender profile. I looked at the type of offences and the areas of those young people and where they come from, and that from that I decided to get Nick, Jackie and other agencies, the voluntary sector involved, youth offending teams, because why reinvent the wheel when Wigan Youth Offending Team on our doorstep was one of the 11 yachts that Bill talked about early on about restorative justice best practice. So I got Graham Doubleday to come into the yacht, come into the prison along with Lancashire Yacht as well. And we started a working group. We involved magistrates, we used the case managers within the establishment, and the most important thing, we used the prison managers within the system as well to take some of ownership to help us drive this initiative forward. So from there, we had this working group. We developed a program, and from that, we developed an action plan. The action plan then became the action plan as part of the reducing reoffending strategy, and that was called Restorative Justice and Victims Pathway. So now we've got something where the senior management team buy into that restorative justice is what it says on the label. It will get them outcomes, and it will help the young people. It will help restorative justice within the prison, with offenders, with adults in the system that we've got, with staff, etc. So we developed that. Presentation was delivered to the senior management team to get buy-in there, and that worked. We developed policies and procedures because there was nothing in other establishments, so we wrote our own policies and procedures, and lo and behold, we did that 2 months later, HMIP decided to come in and have a restorative justice inspection on us. We were found to be 18 months ahead of other establishments and a hub of good practice and development, and that was fed back in our HMIP. From there, we developed it further. Yep.
You need to have the microphone. Yeah,
here it comes. What age range do you
cover? We work with 15 to 18 year olds.
15 to 18. Yeah.
Yeah.
From that, we looked at the victim code of practice, etc., to tie into our workings, and we started going out to restorative justice conferencings in the community. Jackie and other senior practitioners and Nick went out to conferences, not to do what we're doing here today, but to participate and learn to enhance our action plan. So we then developed internal systems. We all operate within secure settings, a sentence plan that the Youth Justice Board. So we looked at how we can involve that and look at young people's lifestyles and how we can incorporate restorative justice into sentence planning to look at their risk factors. One of the things that we decided in the working group is that on the delivery model, we didn't want it to be that it was us delivering it as case managers, etc., because it'll end up as a system of, I've got to do this, it's offending behaviour work. So we looked at the chaplaincy to do it. They were delivering a model called the Sycamore Tree, which was a very faith-based model, but we decided to review that model and completely change it. We then externally started going to meetings like Transforming Youth Justice, to find out what the agenda is in the community, to make sure we're up to speed. Again, this helped us address things around resources, capacities, programs, timeframes, and engagement. The key thing as well was speaking to the young people to see what they wanted and how they wanted it delivered as well, and their engagement. We already had the victims sewn up through the youth offending teams, and they would do the groundwork in the community to prepare them. So what we have got from there now is we have a restorative justice victim practice group within Hindley that we discuss how we're doing things, etc. It's clearly linked into a strategic plan and an action plan. And that's really my side of things from what I'm going to lead on to a bit later on is the way forward, where other areas I'll cover. But it leads nicely into what we developed called the Time for Change program. Nick.
Yeah, so my role is very much on the practical delivery side with the young people. I'm a parish priest of an Anglican priest of some 20 years standing with 17 years working in the community. But going back further than that, I've been a youth worker, and I still am, even at my advanced age. I'm also an educationalist. I'm a teacher by background, an RE teacher in my case. And so I was in a good position when I joined Hindley in 2010 to help put together an intervention that would be the basis for our restorative justice work with young people. It's called Time for Change. It's called that because we asked the young people who did the very first course what they thought would be a good title for it, and that's what they came up with, and it stood us in good stead, and it really does capture in a nutshell what the course is aiming for. We do the course in four sessions over four mornings, usually Monday, Tuesday of 1 week, then Monday, Tuesday of the next week. It's based around narrative rather than concept. We do use some of the jargon of restorative justice, but essentially we help the young people to victim awareness, victim empathy, and to understand what restorative justice is all about through stories. In the older version, when we still did Sycamore Tree and it was faith-based, we used the story of Zacchaeus from the Bible. We've sat that off and we use the story of Bart Simpson. Bart Simpson, the Telltale Head, is a fantastic example in comic format, both amusing and profound, of how restorative justice works. So we show them that film, and we base a session around that. Then we also do a session which is about victim understanding and empathy, and we use the good old DVD from the Restorative Justice Council of Will Riley and Peter Wolfe, and also Peter Wolfe's book, which has proved very popular with our young people, especially if they've ended up on basic regime and can't have their TV in their pad. So it's quite a graphic book, but also a very powerful one. And I'm sure that you will know the story of it a little bit anyway. We also use a surrogate victim who comes in our third session. The person we use most is a younger woman who has a very powerful story of being a secondary victim of crime, in that her brother was murdered, and she talks about the impact of that. But we also use other people as well who come in and talk about how it feels to be the victim of a burglary and so on. But they're all surrogate cases, not the crimes and not the victims of the young people who are on that particular course. And then we'll wrap that all up in a final session and present certificates, and the young people themselves will present from the narratives that we've used their own understanding of restorative justice to their key workers or case workers, and also to managers and governors who turn up for the presentation as well. So that's essentially the starting point and the ground rock of what we do with the young people and restorative justice. Having designed that course and changed it as appropriate from the feedback we've had from the young people, and got that well established in the prison interventions system, we've then gone on to develop a whole restorative justice philosophy that builds on that foundation. So as Dave's already said, we work now in a joined-up way with the YOT victim liaison and restorative justice workers. We attend their gatherings in that they hold, their meetings. We co-deliver with them, and we take referrals for the course, not only from our own key workers, but also where there's been a recommendation from one of the YOT restorative justice workers, and there's a possibility of that young person then going forward for conferencing. I now sit on ROTL boards. That's for release on temporary license for young people who can go out and do all sorts of things, but amongst that do reparation work indirectly but towards the community, in the local community, in the Wigan area. We have a number of community projects that have been set up for that reparation work. And I'll attend the ROTL boards with the candidates, and I'll give them some more specific help in regards to understanding what they're doing when they go out to do the reparation work, that is not a punishment, that is part of what we've talked about on the course in terms of repairing the damage that they've done through their crimes, even if it's in an indirect way to the community as a whole rather than to their community or to their specific victims. From the course, we help the young people to understand the idea of writing a letter of explanation or apology, and some of those go forward with the help of the key workers and the YOT workers to victims. And we also, from the course, recommend young people for whom, at least from our side of things, if the victim wants it, could be considered for conferencing. We support the conferencing process, so I'm very much involved in that. I spend time with young people before they go on the conference. I've sat in on conference, and I support young people afterwards when they've been on the conference as well. We're in the process of supporting the residential staff in using restorative tools in mediation between young people on the wings and between young people and staff on the wings, and that's an ongoing task, really, and at the moment we're sourcing further training that might be particularly suitable and geared to our residential staff. And in the midst of all that, as an RJ champion for the prison, I'm developing my own knowledge. So in my spare time, I'm engaged in a course at the University of Highlands and Islands. They do a very good online supported learning course in restorative practice. It's postgraduate. So do make a note of that. Excellent, highly recommended. Now I'm going to hand over to Jackie, who's going to talk specifically about some of the conferencing that we've been doing.
Hi, I'm Jackie Pugh. I work as a senior practitioner at Hindley. My background is working in yachts. I worked in yachts for 5 years in Greater Manchester. Before that, I trained as a probation officer. I basically work in a casework team, or if you like, an internal yacht within Hindley. And we pride ourselves with working very closely with our local youth offending teams, and we have very good relationships with local youth offending teams. And that is key, really, to making the victim conferencing happening custody, because we're not in a position inside to go out and to work with victims, although we mainly work with the Greater Manchester and Merseyside, Lancashire areas, North Wales. We do have young people from as far as Birmingham and London, so obviously we're very dependent on RJ workers in those communities doing the preparation work. The preparation work is obviously key as well. Working in prisons, and I know lots of you in this room do, or certainly a few of you in this room do, it's very complicated. People think they can just sort of ring up and say, can we have a victim conference next week? It can't happen like that. There's lots of processes around security, people having to be run through security, their information before they can come into the establishment. The young person needs to be prepared. Time needs to be put aside for that to happen, and obviously the victims, as you'll be well aware, need to be worked with and prepared, not only for facing the offender, but coming into prison. One of the conferences I'm going to talk about, that was quite a traumatic experience for this victim. She actually stood shaking and didn't want to come through the visits hall. Part of that planning, and this is just something we've learned as we've gone along, really, we didn't have a manual, was to think about the timings of those, to think about where they would happen. We have a family room within our visits hall, which has been set aside. It's quite nice. There's a sink in there. There's some quite nice, comfortable chairs, and we thought that would be a really good space, really, for conferencing. So that's what we've set aside. We always try and do conferences in the morning when there's only normally a couple of legal visitors in visits, so we don't have to walk a victim through a visits hall, which can be quite intimidating even, you know, for people that are used to that environment. So these are all things to think about. There haven't been that many conferences yet at Hindley. We've probably done 4 or 5, and I think the reasons are... As you've said yourself, anyway, sometimes getting a victim that's willing to do a conference in itself can be an issue. A lot of the young people that are with us are on short DTOs, so they're on 4-month DTOs, so they're only actually with us for 2 months. And because, as I've said, it takes planning and a process, there's not always time to get that process underway. And I'll be honest, I used to work in yachts. There can be an attitude that while a young person's in custody, they get slightly forgotten about. That can happen until they come out. So I think there are issues sometimes. But I think there are definitely some advantages for doing RJ. Yes, you can wait until that young person comes out and do that work in the community. But I think the advantages you've got is you've got the young person there. They're perhaps sometimes in a reflective mood as well while they're there. And we can sequence that work. You know, after that, we can get that young person onto a program as part of his sentence plan, and we can get him through the program so he's thinking, he's ready. He's ready to do some work with and the RJ worker from the yacht to come in, supported by Nick, supported by myself or that young person's key worker in custody, to get them ready for that work. But as I say, preparation's the key in terms of the security, the practicalities of setting the thing up, and to do the work with the victim and the young person. All the necessary risk assessments. In terms of the case study, I'll call Kieran. It was Kieran's first custodial sentence. It was, if you like, a textbook conference. It was the first one we'd seen at Hindley. There was a lot of pressure on it, how it was going to go. This was the victim who came in, who was extremely anxious when she came into custody. She brought her daughter with her. The young persons had the yacht worker, had their yacht worker with them, and I was in the room, but I wasn't involved. I just sort of sat at the back of the room just to make sure, because I was taking the young person back afterwards. It was a very powerful conference. It turned out that the victim had grown up on the estate where the young person lived now. So although she now lives in a very nice house, you know, she knew exactly where this lad had grown up. She was surprised to see him. You know, she'd visualised a sort of a burly monster, all those sorts of things. After that conference, Kieran went on to do very well. We know he hasn't reoffended. We know he's ended up going to college. We don't know, do we? Would that have happened anyway? We don't know in terms of an outcome. But he certainly cites that as being a significant thing for him, that conference. It really made him think. We did a conference, our most recent conference we did, with a young person we'll call Brett, who was a very different young person. He was a repeat offender, a young person that's been with us on numerous occasions. But for the first time on this sentence, he did show some real victim empathy and some remorse. And it was the first time either his key worker, Nick, or the yacht worker had seen it, and he was ready to meet his victim. The conference went very, very well. The victim said that they got, you know, they felt a lot better, didn't they, for that experience, and were keen to do that. Unfortunately, Brett is back with us, and we discussed whether we should share this story or not, because, you know, no one likes a bad story. But I kind of think it's important, really, that one, the important thing is about the victims, isn't it? The victims wanted that conference and they had their conference. And in terms of a tool for reoffending, perhaps that's more of a byproduct. We hope that's going to happen. And perhaps it will for Brett. Perhaps further down the line, that will come back to him. He'll remember that story. It didn't on this occasion, but we have to remember, don't we, with this group in custody, we're not talking about prevention, we're talking about young people that have got as far as custody. We're looking at 70% reoffending rate. So I think we have to be realistic sometimes in terms of RJ, in terms of reoffending, what we're dealing with. I don't think that was a wasted conference. It was powerful for the victims. The victims got a lot of closure from it, and it certainly had an effect on Brett, even though he's back with us now, as I say, whether it'll do something for him further down the line. So they're just some examples, really. The main thing that we're trying to do is build really strong links with RJ workers in our local yachts, because we need to work together on this to make it happen. We've had an event where we've brought RJ workers in from Merseyside, from the northwest. I was talking to a Welsh colleague. We're planning to do the same for North Wales, because we have a lot of young people from North Wales. And it's about that working together at an early stage in a young person's sentence, identifying the possibility for victim conferencing, building it into the sentence plan, and having the time to prepare that for that work and to prepare that young person and that victim for that work to go ahead.
Thanks, Jackie. That we've nearly finished our bit, and then it's over to you for questions or things you want to share with the people in the seminar here. Just a few more words from me, and then a few words from Dave on what we've entitled The Way Ahead. The way I see it, in terms of developing from where we've got to, and we've by no means got to a perfect place, where I see that we've got to the end of the first part, and there's a whole journey ahead in how we take RJ forward within our establishment. I think a really important part of it is going to be making sure that we keep RJ as a whole prison initiative, and that we build that way, rather than it being seen as something that's done over here by a few people, that actually it's going to need to involve everybody, whether that's staff on the wings, health staff, or indeed managers and governors themselves. And one of the advantages I think that we've got, and that I came into when I joined the prison, is that we already had Dave, and now we have other senior managers on board with what we want to do. So we're not banging our head against a brick wall. And the national profile of RJ is very helpful for this as well, in that prison leaders are cottoning on to the reality that RJ works, but, and also that it is a big part of the government agenda, and in our case, with 15 to 18-year-olds, with the YJB agenda as well. I think the last thing I want to say, and perhaps this is a personal thing, a slightly confrontational thing, but I love the title of the talk earlier from the gentleman who talked about being a restoraholic. You might expect this from a vicar, but I'm a believer in restorative justice. And as again was said earlier, I think we really need to get hold of the fact that it's a process and an approach and a philosophy, and it's not just a tool, and it's not just a tool that can work in reducing reoffending. I think it's something that's right to do, as Howard Zia said, who's one of the godfathers of restorative justice from North America, from the Mennonite Church, who've been big players in the development of restorative justice. He said we should be doing restorative justice not just to reduce reoffending, but because it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing that victims should have the chance to get things put right and have the damage repaired to the extent that's possible. So that's enough waffle for me, and over to Dave finally.
Right, thank you. My area is obviously the strategic side of it. It's very hard for me to divorce myself from it. A bit like Andy, a bit of a restoraholic, fantastic word. Passion, yes. Driving it, yes. They mentioned to me about being on the senior management team, yes. Frustrates me, yeah, because I can't get into the coalface and get dirty and get back to doing the practice and that. But what I can do is get the buy-in from the local area managers, the yacht managers, voluntary sector, and the prison governors. Once you've got them on board, the resources, the capacity, the equipment, the victims coming in, etc., all starts rolling along. It's then these people like Jackie and Nick can get the practice side of it working effectively with the community. How can we go forward? Well, what I've looked at is within the secure settings is the civilianisation of the casework model within Hindley. And what I have done is gone for a multidisciplinary model where we're keeping disciplined officers that are wanting to stay within the prison service and within the casework model. But we're also bringing in 12 caseworkers from the community. They will come from Lancashire Yacht, Manchester Yacht, Greater Merseyside Yacht, and other Greater Manchester Yachts, etc., to build up a team. Within those yacht workers that are coming in are those that have been Youth Justice Board trained in restorative justice training, the trainer. These will be spread out amongst the three teams to enhance Nick and Jackie, to ensure that happens more effectively and the quality of the restorative justice improves. What I'm trying to do is have one seamless plan from the custody to the community. And by getting the community working in custody, that seamless plan will become our plan, of which restorative justice will form a very good basis to it. A lot of today they've talked about cognitive behaviour issues. I mentioned from the strategic point of view, I did the offender profile. No surprise that comes out the core asset for young people is attitudes to offending, thinking and behaviour, and motivation to change is major risk factors as to why 15 to 18 year old young people offend. Restorative justice works in those areas very well. So the civilianisation, the multidisciplinary approach will help to enhance our restorative justice model. The thing that I leave open to us all around here is, how do you measure it? I've been in restorative justice for a very long time. I've never seen a system on measuring outcomes on restorative justice. And I'll leave you with that thought. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for listening to us slightly longer than we said. So it's over to you. You have to speak into the microphone because we're on the telly. So over to you for questions or things you want to bring up, and we'll have a discussion together. We haven't got all the answers, by the way. We're, as I said earlier, to use a cliche, we're on a journey.
Hello. Just going back to almost one of the first things that was said, I work at a Category B prison with long sentence prisoners. And there's all kinds of things that have come up today which have been relevant, some not so much. But something that stuck out from what you said, Dave, just from your experience perhaps at Hindley, but also going back to your work with the Aboriginal Society, if we can call them that.
Yeah, that's fine.
Part of my remit as a chaplain is to concern myself with our significant, perhaps small in number, but significant population of Irish travellers, yeah. Gypsies that we have. And from in conversation that I would have with them about their feelings about their offence and their own culture, is their attitudes towards things like restorative justice. And I just wonder, I've not witnessed any information about this yet, and I wonder if you had, perhaps if it's just a personal opinion, does restorative justice work, or has it worked amongst certain cultures where perhaps they have perhaps had their own idea of what justice or how justice should be served?
Yeah, I can talk from the Australian perspective where I've seen it. Australia's very multicultural society over there, and to say that the Aboriginal community are the indigenous people to the country, but over in Australia there's the Vietnamese cultures, and just to use them as an example, the Vietnamese culture is one of lack of trust of authority. They fear authority, so police officers in uniform going to a house causes massive cultural issues and shame on the family. And it might be for another of the reason than a neighbour nuisance issue, nothing serious, etc., but the shame that it would bring on the culture in that. And it's, I think, from the travelling community as well, and having worked with some of the travellers both inside prison and outside prison, is it's key to, and it's same with the Aboriginal community and any community, it's understanding their thoughts, their beliefs and their attitudes and their culture. It's once you understand that, you can get into the way they think and then turn the restorative justice principles on them so they take ownership of them. If you do it as I think you did, Andy, I think in your presentation, if you do it to them, to the cultures, you will meet resistance. You are authority. You are talking to them. And the travellers, like any other community, like the Aboriginals, you talk to them, the barrier will come up, and you will not break that barrier. And then any chance of getting in then, you're labelled. You won't get into that community. It's the same with the travellers over here. Now, what I did to break down two or three of the travelling community when I started working with them in the community, and the couple that I've worked with, as sad as I am, I work on a Saturday morning in an attendance centre. I've worked with them there, because that's me trying to get back to being in the coalface, by the way. In my second job, I worked with them there, and one of the things that I've worked with a young travelling community, young person there, was, Why do you do what you do? You see these TV series, etc., about the travelling community, the boxing that they show, the negative side of it. But when he took me out to meet his family, etc., one day, because I said to him I'd drop him home, and he said, come in, meet my mum and dad, and that. And I was there for an hour and a half, you know, nearly ended up being single because I didn't go home. But the feedback that the family gave me and the understanding I went away with, and next time I knocked on the door, it wasn't, what have you brought him home for? What the issues are, was, come in, do you want a tea, etc. And that's barrier. That's the first side of breaking that barrier. So then if you want to start working with them, it's about understanding them, working, as Andy said, with them, not to them. So to say that about travellers or any other community, that's what I'd say as a personal thing, work with them.
Just to come on the back of that, I think we have quite a few travellers and Romanies who make their way to our prison, partly because of our location in northwest of England and the proximity of Ireland. And I've done a little bit of research as well into traditional cultures. And traditional cultures, obviously, they have quite a different way of doing justice than the way that has grown up in the Western world. And in the traveller communities, it's often done through violence, isn't it, where where a fight is held on behalf of the victim against the the perpetrator or the actual parties involved in a conflict slug it out with each other. And although that's in one sense the distance away from restorative justice, in another sense it's quite close to it, because it's actually saying the conflict actually belongs to the parties involved, rather than what we do in Western justice is we take that conflict away and say that it's in the hands of the state, and the prime party that is offended against is the state, right? And the actual victim who has house burgled or is assaulted or whatever doesn't really have a part to play, do they? Until you start bringing in restorative justice. So I think those more traditional cultures do have an understanding that's quite easy for us to look at building upon in terms of bringing restorative justice and saying, well, actually, this might, you know, in terms of doing it with rather than to, well, this is, you have this approach in your community, and actually here this restorative justice approach is actually very much the same thing. It's just done peacefully rather than violently. I don't know if that helps.
Any other questions?
John Bennett from Ashfield Young Offenders. My concern, and I've been doing it now, we started off in 2006 on bringing in restorative justice. The number of I call them external victims from the outside coming in to meet the young offenders, it's always been rather low. A good year for me was when we had 12 in through that year, and most of them came from the same youth offending team, which indicates that there are some youth offending teams who have got somebody there that has the knack of approaching victims, and I won't use the word persuading, but sort of talking them through the issues so they are willing to meet the young people. So what are your thoughts on this? At the moment, the juvenile estate is quite low, and we've got about 150 young people. So this year we've done 8, which is still a low number. And there doesn't seem to be any progress to get more victims coming in.
I think we've got something to learn off you, because we've done fewer, but Jackie. Probably Jackie.
I think, as I was saying before, really, it's two-sided. It's one, I think, perhaps in general terms, having a victim that's sort of willing or able to do the conference. You know, the numbers are relatively low. And I think the other problem is reminding yachts that we can do that work while that young person's in custody. It's not something that we have to wait for their release, or it's not something that, because they've got a custodial sentence, can't happen. And I think it's just trying to reinforce that message. And I think it's like any training or learning. I notice when we have had events or we have had a successful conference and words got round, you tend to get a couple on the back of that. It just reminds people, doesn't it, that facility's there, we can do the conferencing within the custodial estate. And it's just keeping that message going and building those links. But I think it's an ongoing process, and I'd agree with you. For us, there are certain youth offending teams that are perhaps more proactive in that. It's more of a higher on the agenda than others. I know Salford was mentioned as good practice. Their victim worker comes in to see every young person from Salford that comes into custody and sees them and sort of sounds them out about the possibility of any form of victim work, but ultimately conferencing. As far as I know, they're the only, they are the only yacht that do that. But again, it's just about building those links and keep getting the message out, I think, really.
The other thing from a strategic point of view is, as a manager, as a yacht manager, I go out to Greater Manchester Yacht Managers meetings and Greater Merseyside in Lancashire, and I raised those issues. We only had 6 restorative justice conferences. Why aren't you attending? So it's sort of a name and shame way, but it's under the table way, you know, that can you help us? You know, we want to improve our restorative justice. And then what we are tending to do is have open days. A couple of years ago, we had a restorative justice conference in Hindley, where Baroness Newlove came along and did a presentation, and that sort of helped us get us on the agenda. And then Nick and Jackie have had further conferences with Greater Merseyside, and we're going to have further conferences as well in the prison. It's about promotion, and that, and a lot of establishments, and Hindley's guilty of it, just like Ashfield. We don't self-promote. We don't tell people what we do. so the outside don't know what you do, then they're not going to engage. They're not going to do the conferencing with you. And it's like Jackie said, it's once you've got them going, people will start engaging.
I think, alongside that, I think it's... Sorry.
I think we do promote very well. We've gone through the same things as you. Got them in, showed them around, gone to their meetings and explained our... I think what's missing is... The actual person who contacts the victim, you know, it's there needs to be something special about that sort of person. It's not like some of the arts, they just send a letter. It ticks all the boxes, but very few people reply to a letter, where others would send the letter but then make a phone call afterwards and say, you know, what can we do from you? These are the options and that sort of thing.
And this is, it gets back to, again, going to the yacht manager's meeting and telling them that. That is a valid point. Mm-hmm. You're ticking a box by sending a letter out. Are you engaging with the victim? Is the victim aware that they can come into Ashfield and do this? Because we've got all this system. Challenge them.
Okay. I think also one thing I was going to say is... having champions out there amongst the yacht staff as well. We've got a superb person working in Rochdale as a victim liaison officer, and she does a great job. She attends the regional restorative justice stroke victim liaison officer. Victim liaison officer? Yes, it is. Meetings. And she enthuses about what she's doing, but also what is possible to do in terms of conferencing within the prison, and that's been a great help. Anyway, we're going on to somebody else.
It's not really a question, it's just sharing some good practice, I think. I've got to admit, I was probably one of the biggest critics of Cumbria Youth Offending Service when I found out the number of victims who were engaging with conferences until I tried it myself. And it's a pretty hard thing to do. I think a lot of it's down to ignorance on behalf of the victim. They just don't quite understand it, and it's a fear factor. But I was actually participating in a forum run by Restorative Solutions, who are working with the integrated offender management teams. And a colleague from Manchester told me that when he goes to visit a victim, he doesn't actually tell them that he's there to prepare them or to discuss restorative conferencing. He's just there to discuss the incident. And he goes through the restorative questions and ends up saying, if you got, what would you say to that offender? And the victim will say lots of different things. And then he'll hit them with, what would you say if I could arrange for you to see the victim to say that, the offender to say that? And they've already sort of gone through the pain barrier. So I thought that was a very good piece of practice. And I think there's a lesson here in terms of sharing good practice, that the Restorative Justice Council magazine is probably a forum in which to do something of that nature.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's great.
Can I just say on that as well that I think sometimes what happens is a case manager will come into the custodial environment, and it's whether they're having the conversations with the perhaps the RJ worker and the youth offending team as well. You know, that link needs to be happening within the yacht, you know, never mind between us and the yacht. And I think sometimes with custody, perhaps there's a sense of, I don't know, that the horse has bolted, that sometimes a lot of the RJ and yachts can be focused around sort of referral orders and a lot of the early intervention stuff. And it's just reminding that message that, you know, it can happen in custody, and to let RJ workers know that they're welcome into custody. You know, we've got the rooms where they can see young people, where they can do that work. It's not just for the case manager of that young person while they're in custody to engage with them.
We've got about a quarter of an hour if we need it, but I'm also conscious that kind of London rush hour is looming as well, so, and that we've had a very long day. But are there any more comments or questions that people would like to put? Now is your chance.
Anything from the online people?
Nope.
Great.
Any final thoughts?
No. Just anything we can do to help you, by all means, contact us at Hindley, or, you know, that we're there to help. Those of you that work within the custodial environment that are in here today, by all means, you know our names. Come on, ask, we'll share.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming along. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.